Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Good evening and welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside my co-pilot Sean Boyd, show 35 of On the Double.
Man, keep climbing in the ranks of shows, Sean, number 35. A great day, super weekend, to say the least, as far as the gridiron goes. And of course, we're going to be talking about some basketball here in the next couple of minutes. But yeah, definitely show number 35, getting off to a great start.
You know, I mentioned that to a coworker of mine today, and he said, how many shows have you had now? I'm like, well, tonight's 35. And he said, wow, that's over half a year. Well, sure is. I mean, we started, what, back in May. So, you know, it's been a good ride.
Yeah, definitely. And so, you know, we've talked about some great things, and, you know, this show will be no different, of course. And just real excited about our first guest of the show coming on today. We've got Michael Stewart coming on. And so for those of you who know, you know, the former Sacramento King, Cal Bear, he's a local in Northern California. I believe he now resides in Florida. And so we're going to get this show started off right, man.
Yeah, it's going to be a great show. And let's waste no time. Get right out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in big time guest number one. That is Michael Stewart. Michael, thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, how are you guys? Thanks for having me.
Good, good. Man, Michael, welcome on the show, man, and thanks for taking the time out. I know the schedule is busy, but, man, I'm glad we got you here, and we'll waste no time, man. I mean, what's going on with you these days?
Well, I think you mentioned a minute ago, I live in Orlando, Florida now. I've been here for about 14 years. After my second year in the league, my first year in Toronto, I moved out here, bought a house, you know, and I've kind of been out here ever since. So I have two little kids now, two boys, and just spend a lot of time around those guys, you know, doing homework and dad type of stuff. That's about it.
So for those of you who don't know, Michael is from the Sacramento area, man, and, you know, we're definitely proud of all of the athletes that come out of this region, this area. Of course, you are a Kennedy Cougar.
And yes, so, sir. JFK all day.
Man, and back in the day, you did some great things, you know, I believe in 1991, you know, leading Kennedy to back-to-back city section titles. And so, you know, that's a great thing. I know for me, living here in Sacramento, you know, we always talk about, you know, some of the greats that come out, and you're definitely one of them, my man.
Oh, man, you're making me sound like an old man. 1991, oh, my goodness. No, but, you know, those were the best times of my life. I mean, you know, I went on to play college basketball and, you know, got a chance to play in the NBA. But we laugh all the time. When I was growing up, I don't know if I ever dreamed of being a Sacramento King, but I used to dream about being a Kennedy Cougar. My brother played there. I used to love going, watching him play, and that's honestly all I wanted to do was play for Spider Thomas and put number 44 on at Kennedy High School. So it was great for us to have a chance to have some success there, got a chance to play with some great guys, and those are probably the best memories that I'll ever have.
Well, you definitely did that in fine fashion, Michael, and, you know, of course, you mentioned University of California playing there and playing with the Sacramento Kings. Now, you had a background as far as your dad. I believe he played in the European League. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. My dad was an All-American at Santa Clara University. My brother played there as well. But after he played, he was drafted by the Memphis Tams. Nobody remembers them. That was an old ABA team. Decided to go play overseas, spend most of his career there. So as a family, we grew up overseas. He played in Italy and France, and you know, I lived there until I was seven. After that, we moved back to Sacramento. But he was a great player.
Michael, one of the great things that you did was block shots. And when you left Cal Berkeley, you were the all-time leading shot blocker with a whopping 207. It's pretty obvious that you took pride in that.
Yeah, you know, I never really considered myself an offensive guy, and I was a role player. That's what I always did. I always felt like, you know, some of my coaches used to give me advice, and they would say, you know, master something, become really good at something, and it'll be difficult for the coaches to keep you off the floor. So the longer I played, never was really an offensive guy. You know, I took pride in my rebounding and, you know, running the floor, getting dunks and stuff like that. But my calling card was always my defense. And that was able to carry over, you know, as long as I played. I always took pride in that. It you know, it made me feel good, gave me a purpose on the court. And it was, to me, it was a vital role. If you can play defense, you can play for as long as you want to play.
Take us back to that first contract with the Sacramento Kings. What was that like for you going from college to your hometown team where you went to high school nearby, and now all of a sudden here's a one-year contract to be a member of the Sacramento Kings? What did that feel like?
You know, it was great, but it was just funny how the whole thing happened. When I was at Cal, you know, I don't think a lot of teams liked me because I wasn't an offensive guy. You know, all of them thought I was a pretty good defensive player, but they thought that was my ceiling. So I didn't get a whole lot of workouts. My college coach ended up giving me two workouts, one with the Golden State Warriors and one with the Sacramento Kings, two local teams. So the day after the draft, I worked out for both teams. They both said they liked me. I didn't get drafted. The day after the draft, the Kings called me and said, "Hey, we thought you had a good workout. We liked your work ethic. Why don't you move back home and come work out with us?" So I was at the very bottom of the totem pole. They needed a workout partner for Pejo Stojakovic, who was still in Greece. So I would come every day, work out with Pejo, and, you know, the days just started adding up. And, you know, it went from being a workout partner to a summer league player, from a summer league player to vet camp. And, you know, I played my butt off in vet camp and in the preseason and ended up making the team. And for me, it was a dream come true. I mean, I, you know, played section games at Arco Arena and all that kind of stuff. I'm from Sacramento. My mom and my dad and my family, all my friends got a chance to come see me play. And it was probably, you know, one of the most special times of my life, just getting to play at home. It actually meant something to me to be a Sacramento King.
Michael Stewart, kind enough to join us on the Double with the Double S Express. You know, talking about some of these times at Cal, of course, Todd Bozeman was the head coach at the time. And, you know, you guys in 93, I believe, the team went to the NCAA Sweet 16, went 2-1 that year. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, actually, 93, my first year, we ended up losing in the first round.
Uh-huh.
So the Sweet 16 year was actually the year before where they beat Duke and went to the Sweet 16. That was actually one of the reasons why I chose Cal. Because, you know, it was a local team. Monty Buckley was from Sacramento. He was on the team. You know, Jason Kidd, you know, got a chance to play with him the summer league the year before. So I wanted to stay home and play for Cal. And, you know, them making the Sweet 16 just solidified it. So I got there that next year. Jay Kidd came back. Lamont Murray came back. We had a pretty good recruiting class. We started off number 5 in the nation. But we ended up losing in the first round to Wisconsin Green Bay. Big time upset. And but we made the tournament pretty much every year. My senior year, we ended up getting back to the Sweet 16, which was great. We lost to North Carolina in Syracuse, but you know, it was great just getting a chance to advance and be a part of the Sweet 16.
And those fond memories of playing at Cal, of course, preceded with what you were saying and playing in high school. And of course, you had mentioned playing at Arco Arena for the sectionals, for the Sac Joaquin section, and getting the chance to get that fervor to play at the next level. How important is it for a young man, you know, in high school to actually catch on to that vision, you know, getting to that next level?
No, I mean, I think everybody has to have a goal no matter what they do. And, you know, having the ultimate goal, it just drives your work ethic every day. And it also helps to have some successes. So, you know, each time that I advanced and I was able to play well and, you know, compete with guys who were pros, you know, it really helped me when Sharif Abdul-Rahim signed at Cal, because he was, I mean, I could tell the very first day I saw him that he was a pro. And he ended up leaving after 1 year. And, you know, he's the number three pick in the draft, went on to have a great career. Actually still works for the Kings now. But, you know, playing against Reef every day really made me start believing that I had a chance to be a pro. And I don't even know if I've ever told Sharif that, but he's one of the main reasons why I was able to, you know, get that dream in my head, because, you know, every day competing against him, I said, hey, if I can play with this guy, then I can probably play with anybody.
Those are definitely great words to go off of. And, of course, having a, you know, a mentor like Sharif, and you mentioned Jason Kidd being a predecessor, you know, on the team as well. You know, being from Sacramento, it's very important for these young men to see a player such as yourself get to the next level. Of course, we haven't talked about Kevin Johnson. And, of course, you know, he's one of Cal's greats as well. Did he play a role at all in your vision of playing at Cal, or was there any communication back then while he's playing with Phoenix? And
you know, I never really got a chance to meet KJ until later on in my career, but absolutely, when I was on my recruiting trips, the coaches made it a point to, you know, not only get me reengaged with Monty spent a lot of time recruiting me, but you know, just promoting the successes that KJ had, you know, coming from Cal and getting a chance to play in the NBA, coming from Sacramento, obviously, you know, Sac High. He's a Sacramento legend. You know, we made it a point to go, you know, play in Curtis Park so we could say, hey, we played in the same court that KJ played in. And he was just always the guy that we looked up to growing up, because he was actually able to achieve that ultimate goal of being an NBA player, and he was from our hometown. So guys like that, you always look up to. Sacramento, you know, historically, it never had a lot of guys end up being pros. So KJ was at the top of that list.
Speaking of Kevin, of course, there, you know, there are some great events that have been happening over the past couple of years that are involving Mayor Kevin Johnson. And I don't know how often you're making it back to Northern California, but of course, one of them is keeping the Sacramento Kings in town. That was something that was amazing. I mean, for you growing up in Sacramento and knowing, you know, the Sacramento Kings, I mean, how big was that for you, you know, as far as, you know, an NBA player playing for the Kings and now, you know, former player? How important was that for you for the Kings, you know, staying in Sacramento?
Oh, well, I mean, I think the bigger thing is if the Kings would have moved to Seattle, Sacramento probably would have never gotten another professional sports franchise. And it would have been sad, because our fans are some of the best in all of professional sports. So, I mean, I was so happy that KJ was the mayor during that time, because it was important for him to keep the team there. You know, if it was somebody else who didn't play or didn't understand the importance or the history of the Sacramento Kings, they may have let him leave. And that would have been a catastrophe. You know, it was great to see KJ put everything that he put into keeping the team there. That Sacramento deserves a professional basketball team.
Michael Stewart, kind enough to join us on the Double with the Double S Express. Michael, as a former NBA professional basketball player, what did you find the biggest difference was from the college game moving to the pro game? Was there something that surprised you outside of the monetary difference, obviously? How did that work? And was there anything that you were a little bit surprised to learn or have to understand that was different from college?
Yeah, a couple things. I mean, I think, you know, there's the obvious things. You know, the players are much better. The game is faster. You know, every night you're playing against the best people in the world. You know, that's a given. But I think, you know, one of the biggest things is just time management. You know, realizing that you are a professional basketball player. Nobody's going to ask you to work out. Nobody's going to follow behind you and, you know, seeing if you're doing what you're supposed to do. In college, you know, it kind of came along with it. You're still a college kid, so part of the coaches and assistant coaches' jobs was to make sure you went to class, make sure you showed up on time for your workout. If you didn't, you got punished, you know, that type of thing. In the NBA, you know, if you're late for practice, you get fined, and, you know, you'll end up, you know, maybe losing playing time, and eventually you'll end up out of a job. I mean, so it's really important that you act as a professional. And it takes some guys a long time to realize that, you know, in the off season, whatever, your time is your time. And you have to choose to put the time in, work out, you know, train, lift weights, make sure you stay in condition, because that's what's going to keep you in the NBA and give you that longevity. And sometimes it's hard to realize that. I mean, when you're younger, especially.
Michael, when the game turned professional for you, and you, as you're mentioning, that you have to stay, you have to find a way to be disciplined, and you don't have that coach looking over your shoulder and people telling you where to be at certain times and when to work out, like you're mentioning, did the game always stay fun as a professional?
That's a good question, because I obviously had different levels of success in my NBA career. There was times when I played a lot. There was times when I didn't play at all. And obviously, you know, during those times, it's still nice to, you know, that you have a contract and that, you know, it's guaranteed and you don't have to worry about that. But it is hard to keep the game fun. You have to find ways to keep it fun. I think you have to, you know, take it back down to the essence of it. And, you know, we used to come in late at night, play pickup games, you know, play one-on-one after practice, just different things to stay sharp and to make you remember why you like the game, so that when your time does come again, you'll still have that passion, because, you know, that's definitely one important thing, is you have to stay ready. And if you get down on yourself and, you know, the game doesn't become fun, then, you know, when you get out there, that's going to show. So I think that's part of your job as well, is to find different ways to keep it fresh, whether it's through training or working out with your teammates or whatever. That's part of your job. You got to keep it fun.
Michael Stewart with us on the Double with the Double S Express. Man, you are mentioning some great things as far as preparation is concerned. You know, if players have aspirations of getting to the next level, it is very tough. And I know for, you know, myself being a scholarship athlete, my son who's playing basketball right now at Chaminade University, it's tough. You know, people see, the cool part, the actual game being played, but the preparation, you know, to become great, it's a lot of hard work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I can't remember who said it. I think it was Coach K. They said you have to fall in love with the process of becoming great. You know, that's a great statement, because if you love the work, if you love being in the gym, you love being in condition, all those kind of things, and it's going to show when you play. And I think for any kid coming up, I mean, those are definitely words to live by. You know, start loving being in the gym, love practicing, and those are the things that are going to make you a better player.
So shifting gears a little bit, Michael, now you're down in Florida enjoying the, you know, the great sunshine down there. Man, I tell you, you're one of the better places to live in the country, no doubt about it. What's going on in the community? You have basketball clinics. You know, what are you doing helping hand-wise out in the community?
You know, most of the things, well, when I finished playing, I started a medical supply business, which I still run today. So a lot of the community development initiatives that I get involved in have to do with healthcare. So I sit on the board of the Florida Hospital Cardiovascular Institute. You know, we definitely get involved in especially, you know, for me, it's important that we've seen so many different instances where student athletes don't get the proper heart tests and end up in a situation where, you know, they pass away on the court or something like that from a condition that was easily diagnosed if they had the proper tests. And I actually had a college teammate, Kenyon Jones, who had an enlarged heart and passed away when he was 26 years old. He had a wife and a little boy. And that was a real eye-opener for me. So those are the type of things that I like to get involved in this community. So it's a passion of mine. We spend a lot of time, in those type of community development initiatives. And hopefully one day, when it's appropriate, I can get those same tests done for my kids to make sure that they stay on the right track.
Wow, that's excellent. Is that something that you proposed to the NBA as well, or is it just community-wide or nationwide, just amongst the public?
Well, I have not proposed it to the NBA. Most of the things we do are for local youth, but it's amazing how there's guys like Jeff Green and Channing Frye and Coutinho Mobley. Fred Hoiberg, another guy back in the day, who played basketball their whole life, great NBA franchises. They've had all kind of tests and, preseason, evaluations and all that kind of stuff. And 10 years into their career, they go to another team and they say, if you play another game, you could be risking your life. And those are the type of things that should not happen.
Definitely. Well, Michael, it's been great having you on the show, man. And whenever you're in the Sacramento area, don't be afraid to knock my door down, because, man, we'd love to get together with you and share some other great ideas. But we appreciate having you on the show, man.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me.
Michael, I appreciate you for everything that you brought here tonight, your insight, and definitely you're setting a record here tonight. You're the first person on the East Coast live on our show. Thank you very much.
You guys got me up late tonight. Thank you, guys. Good luck with the show, guys.
Well, thanks, Michael. Hey, anytime, man. Anytime.
All right. Thank you.
There goes Michael Stewart, Cal Bear basketball player, longtime NBA player. Started out with Sacramento Kings. Definitely good talking to Michael tonight.
Yeah, man. You talk about fun. We got a chance to talk about Kennedy High School, one of the Metro High School basketball teams, Cal Bears as well, and Sacramento Kings. It's been a long time, man, since we talked about the Sacramento Kings. Got that one out, and looking forward to talking with Michael and a few more Kings down the road.
Absolutely. Big thank you to big-time guest tonight, Michael Stewart. As you're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express, we'll be right back after this, powered by Papa John's Tri-Cities.
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy. Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name. Yeah. Cause you're with the first flame. Yeah.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, delivered by Papa John's Tri-Cities. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. It's time to get into the talk of all over online, at the coffee shops, wherever you're at. There's NFL fever all over the country.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, this past weekend was a weekend of anticipation, and that's on both sides, the NFC and the AFC, but none more, especially on the West Coast, than the NFC. You're talking about the Seattle Seahawks and the New Orleans Saints going at it, and then the San Francisco 49ers and Carolina Panthers, and neither game disappointed, Sean Wally. They were both great contests.
It disappointed if you're a fan of the Panthers or the Saints, for sure, as those teams went home losers and their season is over, meaning the NFC Championship is set for Sunday late afternoon or early evening if you're in the Eastern time zone. The Seattle Seahawks host the San Francisco 49ers.
And is this going to be a great matchup or what? You're talking about two teams that have played each other twice already this year. They're very familiar with each other. Of course, when the San Francisco 49ers go up to Seattle, bad things happen. And, you know, I mean, I don't know who the San Francisco 49ers are when they go up to Seattle. But when Seattle comes down to San Francisco, it's more of a taming. So it's real interesting to see on this third game, three's a charm, especially for, you know, for Seattle in the past couple of years in this extended game here, if Seattle can actually run San Francisco out of CenturyLink Field.
Well, it's definitely happened the last two regular season games in Seattle between the two teams. And yeah, it's going to be very interesting. The weather is going to be a lot better as to what they're forecasting right now, right around 50 degrees, which I know isn't warm for you, Mr. Boyd, but that used to be warm for you back in the day in the winter in the Pacific Northwest. And, you know, the rain is only about 30% chance right now, so that's a much better forecast than what we had to watch, see, and go through for all those 68,000-plus fans at CenturyLink on Saturday.
Well, you know, you and myself, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to this weekend for the main reason alone is that we are working the game for Fox Sports. And so, you know, I know I haven't been up there to do a game since what? Gosh, what was that? Was that 2006?
2006 in the playoffs. Your first game was 2005 Christmas Eve when Peyton Manning came to town with the Indianapolis Colts at the time.
And I can tell you back then, it didn't matter when the games were pouring down rain or what. When you're down there on the field, you get a warming sensation because, I mean, you know the excitement and the anticipation. So I can only imagine what's going on right now as far as, you know, Colin Kaepernick trying to prepare his team and Russell Wilson trying to, you know, prepare his team as well. It's going to be a great football game, and I'm excited to be there.
So which direction do you think it'll go? Do you think it'll be status quo for a game in Seattle? Do you think it'll be a slobber knocker that's back and forth and it's going to go down to the bitter end? Or might the 49ers, since they're playing pretty well, come in and just take the game by storm?
Man, you know, playing pretty well. I mean, San Francisco right now, they're handling things business as usual, and they're taking it one game at a time. I believe they're winners of six in a row. And so, you know, you're talking about a team that has been there before in the postseason, and this isn't something that's new to them. So I believe this. I read a fact that this was their third NFC championship game in a row. That speaks a lot for a team as far as consistency is concerned. I do see the game being close. I mentioned that the Seattle Seahawks New Orleans Saints game was going to be close, and it was. It came down to the wire, and if it wasn't for, you know, a couple of missed field goals here and there, and, you know, the way the ball was going, I mean, you know, it could have gone either way, but Seattle wound up victorious, and I said that was going to be a close one. I believe that this was going to be a close one as well. Right now, it's too early to call for me. I know that Vegas has it at 4 points. I just think that's ridiculous in favor of Seattle right now. I believe that San Francisco, you know, will come out and make this a ball game.
Well, 3.5 points is what I've seen from Vegas, and I mean, that's a close ball game. That's within a touchdown, not quite a field goal because they had that ridiculous half a point because you can't score half a point. So why should they be allowed to put that as a line? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, I mean, they have to save money somehow. And, you know, when you're, you know, we had talked about last week, Sean, the San Francisco and Carolina matchup and how both teams were evenly matched with their defenses. And then we also talked about the quarterbacks being similar. But here we go once again, you know, with Seattle, both teams are evenly matched, stellar defenses. Both have strong secondaries and a strong linebacker core along with the defensive line. And both have, you know, quarterbacks that, let's face it, Russell Wilson and Colin Kaepernick aren't the same as far as their mechanics are concerned. But as far as playmaking ability, they bring the same to the table. And so, I mean, this one's a push right here. And, I'm excited, as you can tell.
Yeah, it's definitely been a long time since you've not only been to a game in Seattle, but worked one. And, you know, that's, as we've talked about, that's where you got your feet wet in the TV network sports business.
Yeah, and, you know, and so down here in the San Francisco, Oakland area and working both the Raiders and the Niners games, you know, a lot of the fans, you know, a lot of the people don't understand when I explain to them because they ask. They said, man, it can't be that loud up there at CenturyLink Field. And my answer is, yes, it is definitely loud up there. It, you know, beyond belief. I mean, there are times when, you know, when we're down on the field and we're standing next to each other, you can't hear the person talking next to you. That's how loud it is. And, you know, you can say whatever you want on the structure of the stadium and you know, the crowd noise. These Seattle fans are true green and blue through and through. And so, you know, I expect this to be a daunting task for San Francisco, but I do think that they're ready for the challenge.
You know, talking about the noise, I was working this past weekend for Fox and had the pleasure of working with the announcers, Kevin Burkhardt and Hall of Fame finalist John Lynch. And they're great guys. And the crowd was so loud that I couldn't hear or understand the public address announcer. Not only that, but when Marshawn Lynch scored his final touchdown, the booth was literally bouncing and shaking as the announcers were talking about it on television. And they weren't kidding. They weren't pulling a fast one. The crowd was so loud, the booth was bouncing up and down, and it registered again on the seismic scale.
Yeah, you know, that was something that I heard on the news today, and you know, I don't put that past the Seattle fans. And when you're talking about seismic activity, for those of you listening, I mean, this is a stadium that has some 66,000 people, and they're screaming loud enough that it can register towards one of the nearest. I mean, how far is the nearest seismic, you know, station to where they can, you know, get this register? I mean, that is just incredible that that many people in one area can cause the ground to shake and to get that type of a response.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, amazing that that can happen. And it just shows you what the force of, well, of course, 68,000 plus people. It's a lot of people, but goodness, it's like so many people doing one thing. It's the, it is almost like a team. You know, that's what a team has to do. They all have to work together, especially on a football field, to be cohesive, to be one unit for one common goal.
And it's also a great marketing tool if you're the president or the GM for the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, as far as getting people to play for you, how hard would it be to tell a player that, man, hey, we would like you to be a part of our organization that would help the ground shake? How would you like to be a part of that? I mean, who wouldn't want to be, you know, on an organization like that? I think that's incredible.
Well, things have been getting better in the last few years for the Seattle Seahawks and what Pete Carroll and John Schneider are doing, and that's got to be part of it. You know, the nice newer stadium, the great fan base, and the great headquarters right on the shores of Lake Washington.
Yeah, and so, with the game this past weekend, I mean, a couple of days ago, it was tough. I mean, you know, you're talking about a Seattle Seahawks team that was fired up. The crowd is fired up, and they understand the importance of, you know, this game. And yet, you know, people ask the question about the 12th man, and the 12, you know, the 12s always come out, and they give Seattle that extra ump. And I can tell you that the Seahawks definitely needed that. I mean, this was a game that, You know, you're talking about an onside kick. Graham kicks an onside kick. You know, it's squandered, and they get the ball back, and they have a chance to go down and tie the game. But the 12s, you know, I believe, you know, help make that, you know, help get that victory over the top.
So what were your thoughts on the Drew Brees-led Saints and Sean Payton, the great coach? They came in here a few weeks ago, December 2nd, and got ran out of the building. This game was heading that direction. As Seattle had a 16-0 lead for most of the contest until the fourth quarter, and then the Saints found some life.
Yeah, you know, I thought that New Orleans came out a little flat in the beginning. Of course, it was obvious being down 16-0. But I think that Drew and Drew Brees and Sean Payton and the team did a very good job on what we call making those adjustments. They came out and they understood that they had a decent running game going, and they could mix it up with, you know, with some mid, you know, some middle passes, and the next thing you know, they're back in the game, because the defense, you know, New Orleans defense did a really good job. In the first half, it was just that Seattle played a little bit better, and they understood the, you know, meaning Seattle understood the importance of getting out to a great start. And, you know, I take nothing away from New Orleans. I think they, you know, this went right into their game plan. They probably knew that they were going to be behind in the second half, and it showed, because they methodically came back in the second half. It was just, you know, a couple of key, you know, I'd mentioned the missed field goals, you know, by Graham. And then what was that play, the last play of the game? The forward pass after the catch. I mean, you know, I've never seen anything like that. It was just weird. And I thought, you know, I don't know how many seconds were left on the clock. I believe there was about 8 seconds left on the clock. You know, he could have ran out of bounds, and they could have had another play to do, you know, a trick play. But, you know, that's the way it goes, and that ends the Saints season.
Yeah, I was listening to former NFL great wide receiver Chris Carter this morning, and he said basically Marcus Colston panicked in his estimation, because
you don't think that was a drawn up play then?
Oh, not at all. That there's 7-8 seconds left. You get out of bounds. He was at the 30, the 35. That makes a shot to the end zone that much easier. Or maybe you have enough time for two shots at the end zone.
Yeah.
And to throw forward is ridiculous in itself, but to not go out of bounds and give Drew Brees a chance, that made zero sense.
Yeah, I thought it was just me, and I thought, well, man, maybe his depth perception was slightly off. But I mean, that was more than depth perception. I mean, he literally caught the ball, looked at the sideline, turned, and then threw it forward. I mean, I guess you're right. I guess he just panicked and lost his mind on that one. But you know, if you're going to be a Super Bowl team, you can't make mistakes like that. So it's probably a reason why they didn't win that football game.
So finishing off the NFC playoffs yesterday, the 49ers went into Carolina and took care of business. It's hard to say that's an upset, but because it was in Carolina and Carolina was the higher seed based on winning their division, you have to say that it was. And definitely Colin Kaepernick, the defense of the 49ers, took care of Cam Newton and the Panthers.
Yeah, you know, with the Seattle New Orleans game last week, I picked that game Seattle 24-21, you know, as a close football game. And even though the score didn't indicate that on Saturday, it was actually closer. Of course, we talked about that final drive. This game last week, I predicted also that the San Francisco 49ers would win 27-9. And, you know, even though the score wasn't exactly like that, I mean, it was no contest. I mean, the 49ers came out and they took care of business, even though, you know, Carolina showed signs of, you know, they had a chance to actually break this game open in the first half with a couple of drives that they got down, you know, inside the red zone or inside the 10, and they just couldn't punch it in. They walk away with a field goal. And so, you know, it wasn't like Carolina didn't move the football. It's just they couldn't get it into the end zone.
Of course, Colin Kaepernick ran for a touchdown and stole Cam Newton's Superman end zone celebration. What are your thoughts on that? Obviously, the 49er fans love it and think it's so great. Sean Boyd, your take.
Yeah, I thought that it was interesting, not to say the least, when I first saw that. I mean, one of the things that you don't want to do as a position player or a skilled player, I mean, it's one thing to make fun of a player that's not of your skill, but when you do that, when you make fun of that player who's of your skill, meaning quarterback to quarterback, that, you know, that is a huge dagger. And I cringed a little bit. I take that back. I cringed a lot because, you know, for one, I know Colin to be a great young man, and I know that, you know, he's misunderstood a lot in the public eye. I mean, he's under a lot of scrutiny. He has tattoos. He's posing in magazines, you know, naked, he's wearing his hat backwards, all these types of things. But, you know, Colin, you know, is actually a humble young man. And so I think he gets, misconstrued from time to time. But this touchdown here didn't help his case, you know, when he's busting open and mimicking something that, you know, that Cam Newton was doing. And so, yeah, I did cringe a little bit. I thought that he could have handled that a little different.
It goes to show you that it doesn't appear that Colin Kaepernick gives two cents of what anybody thinks about him or his public image.
No, I would disagree. I think that Colin does care about those things. I just think that, you know, when you look at the individual, Colin the individual, I mean, he's 20. Was he 25 years old? He's a young man, single. You know, he's living life. You know, granted, is he doing the things that most people would say grant as normal? I don't know. You know, but I know that he is a humbled individual, and I know that he cares. It's just that in society, what we look at, and I've seen the comparisons because, you know, having friends and family that are Seahawks fans and friends and family that are 49ers fans, I get a chance to see both sides of the pendulum. And what's swaying from Seattle is that this guy's a recluse and he doesn't care. And, you know, and then they take two pictures and they compare the two and they say, well, hey, Russell Wilson, look at, he's a family guy. He's with his wife. He's at the hospital. He's kissing babies. Well, you know, you can't compare the two that way because they're two different individuals with two different lifestyles. And so, you know, I before we go down that road, I would just say, hey, you know, let's take a look at, you know, if you're 25 years old and you're single in the NFL and you're making tons of money, what kind of decisions would you make? I mean, you know, and I'm not saying that Colin makes bad decisions. It's just, you know, he's living the way a young, single individual with, you know, in the limelight would probably live.
Well, his actions haven't always gone down the road of saying, I want to put out a good path, be a good role model, which he's not out, you know, getting arrested and doing crazy stuff like that, as far as we know. But, you know, the whole Miami Dolphin hat thing was a little off-putting. The, as you mentioned, you know, the tattoos, which that doesn't necessarily put you in a bad position. It's to each his own. You know, you mentioned the magazine that he wasn't, forgot a few items of clothing along the way. And, you know, I think one of the interesting things that somebody said on social media today is, okay, so he kind of mimicked or made fun of Cam Newton and his Superman touchdown celebration. How's he going to imitate or mimic Russell Wilson if he scores on Sunday?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I don't think that he's actually going out to do those things. I think that if you talk to Cam Newton, and I don't know the relationship between these guys, but there had to have been some type of a relationship to where, you know, he would do something like that. I just don't see Colin going around mimicking people. I know him to be a very high octane, energetic player, and that's the way he is. I mean, it is kind of a me against the world type of an attitude, and and you know he handles it that way. But I also know Colin to as somebody who wants to win, who's a team player, that wants to make those adjustments. And so, you know, I don't see him mimicking anything about Russell Wilson. Now if the fans continue to, you know, if he continues to hear more about the fans, because I believe Colin watches Twitter and sees everything that goes on, there might be a gesture that goes back to the fans that might fuel him. And so, you know, it is what it is. I think it's much ado about nothing. I just think that, you know, Colin is Colin, and you know, deep down inside, you know, he just wants to win championships, and he'll do whatever it takes for his team.
That's the voice of Sean Boyd. I'm Sean Wally. This is On the Double with the Double S Express. We've gone over the NFC playoffs. When we come back after this, we will dive into the AFC and talk about the AFC championship and predict who might be moving on to the Super Bowl. Right after this, On the Double with the Double S Express, delivered by Papa John's Tri-Cities.
Likes the inconvenience of car repairs. Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services. Platinum service without the platinum price.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name. Yeah. Cause you're burning with the brush flame.
Yeah. Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. Show 35, and we've got the AFC playoffs in the NFL to get to, and we had a couple of good games over the weekend.
Yeah, you know, one of them was, you know, the AFC West battle between the Denver Broncos and the San Diego Chargers. And, you know, as much as it pains me, I have to tip my hat to the San Diego Chargers. Let's face it, they were not supposed to be there. And, you know, the game was 24-17. And it was one of those games where it seemed like it was out of, you know, in the balance in the beginning in favor of Denver, but San Diego gave it a fight, you know, in the second half and had a chance to tie, you know, kind of similar to the Seattle New Orleans game actually. And you know, I got to, you know, again tip my hat off to the San Diego Chargers.
Well, I was a little unimpressed with the San Diego offense in this game, and it's almost like they couldn't figure a way to get going until they needed to in the fourth quarter, and they found that urgency and that second gear, and it's like, why didn't you come out with this in quarter one? You might have ran the table with the Broncos, but it didn't happen for them. But goodness, Keenan Allen, the product from Cal, just a fabulous, fabulous wide receiver, and he tore it up.
Yeah, you know, that game was a microcosm of actually how San Diego, that San Diego Chargers actually play and who they are. You know, every year, and we talked about this before, every year San Diego is picked as one of the top teams to come out of the AFC. And at some point, they, you know, they either start really slow, which that's what happens, you know, most of the time, and then late in the season they turn it on. But you're right, Sean. I mean, you know, they had 13 total first downs for the game. Just think about that. Out of all the, out of 60 minutes of football, the back and forth goings on, and they come up with only 13 first downs, and most of those came in the second, in the second half. You know, it makes you wonder, you know, is it a front office thing? Is it the players that just don't buy in? I mean, you have a new coach, so, you know, and it sounds like these guys really love the coach. So why is, why does this happen from, you know, year in and year out? I mean, you know, San Diego should be better than this.
Well, they went fairly far in the NFL playoffs, which is something they hadn't done previously with Norv Turner at the helm. And you get three teams out of the AFC West into the playoffs. So a good year for the division as a whole. And now things are going to change in San Diego specifically because Ken Wisenhunt, their offensive coordinator, has taken the head coaching job in Tennessee.
Yeah, so just when you start to get momentum going, you know, you lose an offensive coordinator. And that's very a very important point, Sean, because, you know, a lot of the times people don't look at the head coach as actually, you know, they're the ones that if things go bad, they take the brunt of it. And if things go well, you know, well, it's the quarterback that gets all the praise. And so when you lose an offensive coordinator like Ken Wisenhunt, and hats off to Tennessee for getting, you know, landing Ken Wisenhunt. But, yeah, it'll be one of those things to look at next year to see if San Diego can actually bounce back. But I think it's more than Ken Wisenhunt. There's something about, you know, San Diego that is not allowing them to get over the hump. And for me, you know, I look at the quarterback situation and I just think that, man, the more you believe in Phillip Rivers, the more he'll let you down. And, you know, he's right there with Tony Romo, man. And you know, I mean, he can fill the seats up and he can get you excited. But just when you start to believe most, he'll let you down in the end.
Well, I think that in Phillip Rivers' case, he was making a case to turn that page the last quarter of the NFL season because San Diego was one loss away from being eliminated. And it went down to the final week, and San Diego had won 5-6 in a row to get in. And then, of course, they win at Cincinnati. Phillip Rivers had a good day. You know, the entire offense wasn't great yesterday in Denver. And it is a step forward for the team and for Phillip Rivers, and we'll see if they can build on it next season.
You know, and you know, you're right on that case, but at the same time, you have to look at the position that San Diego was put in at the end of the season. They're playing against a Kansas City team that didn't want to get any players injured. And, you know, of course that wound up biting Kansas City in the butt, and they wound up getting ousted in the first round. But if it wasn't for Kansas City not playing their, you know, a couple of their key starters, Jamaal Charles, who wound up getting hurt in the playoffs, Alex Smith, who had a decent game, but it wasn't a game where he can actually change, you know, be a game changer. And, you know, they sit those guys, allow San Diego to be in the game in the last game of the season. You know, if Kansas City would have just went out there and played Kansas City football, then we wouldn't be talking about San Diego here. And, of course, you know, there are a lot of Pittsburgh Steelers fans that would agree with me. But I just think that San Diego got the luck of the draw in playing Kansas City. They happened to get into the playoffs, and they made the best of it.
And so we know that the number one seed in the AFC moves on to play in the AFC Championship and host it, the Denver Broncos do. And now we wonder who will they play.
And here we are with the Indianapolis Colts coming in, and we're talking about all these great things with Andrew Luck and how he led the team back from victory against Kansas City. And, you know, there are even some reporters, you know, using the name Michael Jordan in the same sentence with Andrew Luck. I mean, this was a guy last week that threw four interceptions, by the way, and he comes out and he takes on the New England Patriots. And New England looks like the New England of old. And, you know, it was just amazing. I mean, 43-22, and the game wasn't as close as the score, to be honest with you. And, you know, you're looking at LeGarrette Blount, that just dominated against the Indianapolis Colts defense. And again, Andrew Luck comes out, and he had a chance to have a decent game, and he throws four interceptions again. So I wonder, are we going to continue to call him this next great type of a player that just takes on the NFL, and he's the, you know, the actual, you know, figure of the NFL, or are we just going to wait and see if he can actually develop as a quarterback? I choose the latter because I think that Andrew Luck is a good quarterback that has a chance to be great. I'm just not willing to put him into that upper echelon just yet.
Yeah, he threw six interceptions in the playoffs here in January, and I find it hard to believe that certain analysts throughout the country think he is the best quarterback of the young guns. And it's amazing that any quarterback that throws six interceptions could be placed on that high of a pedestal.
You're exactly right. And you know, talking about the young guns, the quarterbacks that are coming out, and you're talking about Andrew Luck, you're talking about Russell Wilson, RG3, and Colin Kaepernick. And out of those quarterbacks, to be honest with you, and his numbers don't show it, and this is probably something that you'll concur with me, out of all of those quarterbacks, even though the numbers don't show it, it's Russell Wilson that shows the poise. It's Russell Wilson that actually, you know, is leading his team and bringing them, you know, over the top. There were a couple of key plays in that New Orleans game to where it wasn't big on, you know, it won't show up big on the stat sheet, but there was like a third and long where Russell Wilson kind of, you know, maneuvered around the pocket, and it looked like he just shot-putted the ball over into the right spot to the quarterbacks. Those kind of things you can't teach. Those are attributes that either you have it or you don't. And for the most part, even though his numbers don't show it all the time, Russell Wilson always puts himself in a position to lead his team to victory. And so out of all of the young gun quarterbacks, I would say Russell is slightly, and I mean it's a close slight edge, better than Colin Kaepernick.
And with Wilson, the key with him is that Pete Carroll preaches is take care of the ball, and he's not turning the ball over. The entire team is good about not turning it over on offense and takeaways on defense. And with Wilson, one of the keys in that New Orleans game is it was 16-8, and Seattle had, I believe, a 3rd-and-4, and they had a run play called. And Wilson was wise enough, observant enough, to audible out of it, check out of the play that was called, because he thought they could beat the coverage with, I don't know if you saw the play, Doug Baldwin streaking up the sideline. They needed 4 yards. Yet Wilson throws a dime that Baldwin catches, falling out of bounds, toes inbounds, gets his helmet ripped off on the tackle, still hangs on to the ball, and that was key right before Marshawn Lynch ran his final touchdown in.
Yeah, there were a couple of plays that Russell did, you know, during the game that were exactly like that, that kept the drive alive. And, you know, so much as, you know, with Andrew Luck, so much do we talk about, you know, the physical attributes, the gunslinger arm, you know, the size. Andrew Luck has all of those things. And for years, we've fallen in love with the Brett Favre mentality, this type of a gunslinger that, you know, can thread needles and, you know, make big plays. Those things are great. And I believe that Andrew Luck has all of those things. Right now, I just don't think he has the poise or, you know, as much poise as a Russell Wilson does. I mean, who just shows incredible poise under pressure in these playoffs.
All right, Sean Boyd, the championship games are set for Sunday. The first game being the AFC contest in Denver. Sports Authority Field. Who are you taking, the New England Patriots or the Denver Broncos, to head to the Super Bowl?
Well, I mean, you know, this is the darling of the NFL. This was one of the teams that I got right, because the NFC, I didn't get this one right in the preseason. But, you know, the Denver Broncos are definitely as advertised. You know, they're a team that, you know, they can hurt you offensively. And when they step it up defensively, you know, it's the complete package. Got the Denver Broncos taking care of business against, you know, Tom Brady. And, you know, this is Brady Manning, I believe, 15. Is that what we're talking about? Brady Manning 15? You know, this one will definitely be in favor of, you know, Peyton Manning and, you know, the Denver Broncos. I look at this game, I'm going to call it, you know, 20-10 in favor of the Broncos.
Goodness, you think Tom Brady will be held to 10 points, huh?
Yeah, you know, as much and as touted as the New England Patriots are, for some reason, I just don't see them as being better than how they're playing. You know, it was amazing that they scored 45 points yesterday. I was thrown at that. But I just think that Denver will go in there and hold Brady down to 10 points.
Here's my key in that game, or two keys, I'll call it. On the Denver defensive side, if they can stop LeGarrette Blount, I believe they'll be okay. And conversely, what Belichick does great is take away what you're best at. So on defense, the Patriots take away or try to take away what the Broncos are best at. Well, how are you going to do that? Because that is Manning passing the ball. He has too many weapons. You can't stop all of them. It's not possible. Maybe they take away Wes Welker, because guess what? Who knows Welker better than the Patriots? Not too many people, because he played there for so many years. Okay, you take Welker away, guess what? There's still Demaryius Thomas, Julius Thomas, Decker. I mean, the list goes on and on. You can't stop all of those weapons. And I believe that if Brady has to win the game and they're not having a running game, the advantage goes to Denver. And I'm going to say that Denver's able to do it, having the home field up at Mile High with Peyton Manning and all those weapons.
Yeah, definitely. And I, you know, I concur. I just think that, you know, this is a time for Peyton Manning. This is probably his last window of opportunity to do this. And let's face it, I mean, Brady's, you know, at that point as well. I just don't think that Brady has all the pieces around him, as you were saying, as Peyton Manning does with all the pieces around with him. There are so many other players that Manning can choose to pick you apart, and I think that's what's going to happen.
So we both have the Denver Broncos representing the AFC in the Super Bowl in New York, New Jersey. Who will they play from the NFC, the San Francisco 49ers or the Seattle Seahawks?
Well, you know, I'm looking at, again, we talked about this earlier, and I said it was too close to call, but if I have to pick, you know, you're looking at, you know, the Seattle Seahawks that, even though they had a good win on Saturday, and, you know, they've been playing decent football, you know, late in the season, with the exception of the, you know, the Arizona Cardinals loss, Seattle is due, and Russell Wilson is due to have a spectacular game. And so, you know, with that being said, you know, you have that in place. Then you have the momentum of the San Francisco 49ers to where they've won, you know, winners of six straight. They have gone through a gauntlet of football here, playing Green Bay on the road, winning there, Carolina the next week, winning there, and now up against an ever so tough Seattle Seahawks team that, you know, it has been number one, not just in the NFC all year, but in the NFL. You look at those things and you put them together. I mean, gosh, man, I'm going to have to pick San Francisco on this one. And for the reason that I mentioned earlier, you're talking about a team that's vetted. And I know that Seattle is a great football team. And if they've smacked the mess out of San Francisco. But when you talk about this part of the season and you think about, you know, the years prior, this isn't San Francisco's first rodeo. And I think that they will come out of this game. It's going to be a barn burner. I'm looking at 31-28 in favor of San Francisco.
Sh-
Sean Boyd bringing the knowledge for sure. Definitely not making fans in the Pacific Northwest, where he is on his way, mind you, 12th man. Keep a lookout for one half of the Double S Express. And, yeah, anything can happen in that game, as we've learned over the past 2, 3, 4 years that Harbaugh and Carroll have been in charge. Their bitter rivalry, the fact that Richard Sherman and Doug Baldwin, that played for Harbaugh at Stanford, don't really like the guy. Nobody outside of San Francisco seems to like Harbaugh. it's definitely going to be, man, it's going to be a classic matchup, a classic championship. At least it should be. And if everything is fairly equal on both sides of the ball, you might give a bit of a receiver advantage to the Niners, dependent upon whether or not Percy Harvin can return and recover quickly from his concussion. The run game, being in Seattle and being that Lynch is younger and he just set a Seattle record for most yards in a playoff game at 140, you give that to the Seahawks. Frank Gore has not had over 100 yards in Seattle since 2006.
Good point.
So with all that, the number one defense in the NFL being the Seattle Seahawks, the home crowd, home field, I'm leaning towards Seattle. Not that that's a surprise. You know, I've seen in person the last two times the 49ers were playing in Seattle working for NBC Sports, and then also once as a fan. And for whatever reason, the Niners are completely different, as a lot of teams are, in CenturyLink. That noise is ridiculous. And then, you know, that noise creates so many advantages for the Seahawks, especially on defense, to fire off the ball, for the offense, the opposing offense, not to have communication with each other. And that is key. So definitely that is two different Super Bowl matchups coming from yours truly and Sean Boyd. My co-pilot Sean Boyd has the Denver Broncos representing the AFC and the San Francisco 49ers with the mild upset of the Seattle Seahawks here in the NFC Championship on Sunday afternoon. And I also have the Denver Broncos in the Super Bowl for the AFC and the Seattle Seahawks taking it for the NFC, and that would be a Denver-Seattle Super Bowl, and that would be amazing. And all I got to say for New England is, on a personal note, I hope they get beat, and here's why. Look at the location of the Super Bowl, very close to New England. It would be much like a home game for the Patriots. You know that those Patriot fans would travel from Massachusetts and go right down the highway and try to be at that game, and it might be two-thirds full of Patriot fans, similar to Super Bowl XL when Pittsburgh and Seattle met in Detroit. That's going to wrap up show 35 here of On the Double with the Double S Express, delivered by Papa John's Tri-Cities. Big thank you to big-time guest tonight, Michael Stewart. Michael joined us on the HolySmokeNuts.com phone lines. Michael played in the NBA for the Sacramento Kings, the Atlanta Hawks, the Toronto Raptors, among other teams. Was a college player for the Cal Bears. Got some great insight on life in the NBA and how to get to that level and what the differences were between the college game and playing in the NBA. For Sean Boyd, I'm Sean Wally. It's been a great show. Join us next week. Well, we will know who is going to the Super Bowl. It's On the Double with the Double S Express.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for more great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Yeah, you can be the greatest. You can be the best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest.
You can beat the world. You can beat the war. You can talk the guy, go banging on his door.
You can throw your hands up, you can beat the...